Good morning, Paul. Good morning. Come into the office. How are you feeling this week? What's on your mind?
I'm just exhausted. I'm really tired. I'm sleeping really badly. I keep having these weird dreams.
Oh, this doesn't sound good at all. What are you dreaming about, my friend?
There's one dream where I'm lying in this box, and I've got these like coins on my eyes, and my family are there, and they're dressed really nicely, and they seem really sad, and I don't know what that means.
It could be you're having some sort of existential crisis about your existence, maybe. You could be sort of thinking unconsciously about your demise.
You think? And there's this other dream I have where I'm lying in a boat on a pile of wood, and then someone lights it, and it gets really hot, and then I just drift out. I don't have any oars or anything. I just drift away.
That sounds almost like a Viking funeral ceremony. I think you're having very morbid dreams, my friend.
Well, do you think I'm thinking about death?
It sounds like it, yes.
Oh, well, I'm not down with that. I'm gonna read some comics instead.
The way there is a price to pay for what the man will say, but I was a million miles away in a promise full of steam. It could take no vacant dream to persuade me to believe. I think just don't fight it, don't fight it, don't fight it. If you don't know what it is, if you don't know what it is.
Hello and welcome to DC OCD, the DC Events podcast, where we cover every single DC event in order and we give it a rating. And today I'm joined by my friend Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm very good.
Excellent.
What I told the doctor. Today on the show, we're looking at The Death of Superman, which came out in 1992. And that was a little bit of a to-do, wasn't it, Mike?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit of a kerfuffle in the comics world.
Yeah, but since we talked about, what was it, Eclipso last, what else sort of was happening around that was almost eventy?
Not quite eventy enough. We had the Panic in the Sky event that wasn't an event, which was in the Superman books, and I believe Brainiac got control of Warworld.
And started a good one.
Attacking everyone, yeah. And there was also the Justice League Breakdowns event, which I think was the end of the Giffen run and crossed over between Justice League Europe and America.
Yep. International, it was at that stage.
There we go. Shockingly, I have not read either of those, so shame on me.
Oh, no shame. No shame here. But, yeah, they're not eventy enough. I mean, they're good stories in their own right. But, they're not epic. They don't have the scale. Unlike this little puppy that we're looking at today. So, The Death of Superman. So, way to telegraph it all up front. So, what happened in it? Anyway. So, there's a ton of people involved with this creatively. So, the writers were Dan Jurgens, Jerry Ordway, Louise Simonson, and Roger Stern. So, they were each had a Superman book at the time, bouncing back and forth. So, this happened between the Man of Steel issues, the Superman issues, the Adventures of Superman, and Action Comics. And Dan Jurgens even slipped in a Justice League of America comic at this point because he had just started writing that one. Pencilers were John Bogdanov and Tom Grummet and Jackson Geis, Butch Geis, as he's often known, and Dan Jurgens, super talented, doing lots of stuff. Inkers, there was Brett Breeding, Rick Burchett, and Doug Hazelwood, and Dennis Janke, and Dennis Rodia. So a lot of Dennis's and Doug's mostly. And on the lettering, there was John Costanza, Albert de Guzman, Bill Oakley, and Willie Schubert. And it was colored by Gene D'Angelo and Glenn Whitmore. So you had to start with G to color this one. And edited by Mike Carlin. Just what do you think this one is all about?
This one, as you said, it's telegraphed right from the get-go. It's about the death of Superman. Basically, a giant monstrous being who gets given the name Doomsday appears from out of nowhere, cuts a bloody swath of chaos and mayhem across America, sees an ad for a wrestling event in Metropolis on a TV screen, decides to head there, and of course, you know, as he's traveling along, the Justice League gets wind of this giant monster. They try to stop him, they get beaten to a bloody pulp. Superman tries to stop him, and he gets fatally beaten to a bloody pulp. The end.
Yeah. I mean, this was really promoted as the death of Superman, and I was reading the Superman books at the time, so, you know, I was already on board, but a lot of people suddenly got on board as this happened on a good, slow news day.
Yes.
So back and forwards between all the Superman books at the time. So they did something clever with the villain Doomsday. He sort of appeared in issues before the event. With there was just one page of him punching a wall, and in his green what would you call it, green gimp outfit. Yeah.
Sure.
As he punches the wall, so in four comics you see him, you know, gradually punching harder and breaking out, and the gimp outfit ripping over his knuckles, which are all, you know, the bony, pointy knuckles of Doomsday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So everyone knows who Doomsday is and what he's about. So what do you think of this one?
It's a very to-the-point story. As you said, it was hyped up as you know, Superman's death, and it pretty, you know, there's no major surprises in this storyline. It's like this giant monster turns up, they literally fight to the death, because both, you know, spoilers, both Superman and Doomsday take each other out in the final epic battle on the streets of Metropolis. So yeah, it sort of got straight to the point, though it took 7 issues of comics to get there, but you know.
Yeah, this is, I think one of the interesting things about this is Superman's villains have traditionally been the intellectual type or the trickster type.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't really have that many big hulking physical threats.
No.
Generally. I mean, probably the closest and persistent one is Mongol.
Yeah.
And they invented someone new just to wipe out Superman. And, you know, this was part of the creative train that was going on the Superman books at this time, where they were, you know, basically doing a weekly across 4 titles.
Yeah.
Back and forwards. And, you know, you always had to feed the story beast. So what could they do? And I think someone, half as a joke, suggested we could kill him. And that just launched this whole big idea.
Well, that's the thing, because I was reading that they would actually been leading up to the planned wedding of Lois and Clark in the comics. And then at around about the same time, the TV show Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, came along, and part of their plans was to have them wed on the show. So there was sort of a very impromptu meeting held, apparently, and it was like, well, you know, hold off on your comic book wedding till we get to it on the TV show. And then the writer's like, well, shit, now we need to come up with something else. And yeah, as you said, that's where the joke is, oh, well, we may as well kill him off. And then it was like, actually, yeah, let's do that.
Oh, so, that's like a real-life instance of someone where they come up with an idea and everyone goes, hang on, what did you just say?
Yes. Yeah.
Just like a TV show suddenly.
Yeah, so it was one of those things where they were like, well, we need a new storyline, let's, yeah. I believe it was Jerry Ordway that came up with that joke suggestion. So, and then everyone ran with it. Sometimes crazy ideas pay off, kids.
Yeah. I think one of the big deals about this is the structure. I mean, as a story, it literally goes from A to B with nothing in between. Like,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doomsday shows up. You know, there's a bit of shenanigans with some underworlders in the first issue, which is sort of a leftover from the War World incident in Panic in the Sky. These aliens end up under Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, you know, Doomsday is, you know, on his way in the background. And then, you know, by the second issue of the story, it's all full on Doomsday fighting.
Yes.
So the Justice League come out and get trounced pretty soundly. And then Superman gets involved, and it's just an escalating fight from there. It just gets, you know, more and more desperate closer to Metropolis. The big fight ends up in the city. Yeah, Superman dies. Spoilers. probably unnecessary.
One of the big deals for me in this is that for most of his appearance on the page, until he kind of reaches Metropolis and breaks free of his, as you called it, gimp suit, Doomsday's got one hand like chained behind his back in his outfit, and yet he's still causing all this damage and, you know, beating the merry hell out of the Justice League with one hand.
And, well, you get a couple of characters going, he's got one hand tied behind his back, yeah, in case the audience don't get it.
Yeah, but you're right. He's, as you said, a lot of Soup's villains have been, you know, the super smart strategy guys like Brainiac or Mongol, who had that as well as, you know, his physical being. All the tricksters like Mr. Mixel, however you say it, or, you know, or the Toy Man. But this is just pure rage. It's like even when, what's that alien's name, Double X turns up and starts scanning Doomsday's mind to try and get some info about him, he's like, no, there's nothing there but pure hatred and pure anger. That's all this monster is. And it's just like, wow. There's like, yeah, that's all that's there is to him. Because I don't even think they gave Doomsday a proper origin until about, was it maybe 5 years later or maybe longer than that? He just sort of, no one knew anything about him. He just like turned up.
Yeah, eventually they did a series called Hunter Prey, which was a 3-issue prestige, which that sort of it filled in the blanks on Doomsday and what he was about. And one thing that struck me with this is Doomsday likes to laugh a lot at the start of this.
Yeah.
You know, a little bird lands on his hand and he crushes it and has a laugh. And then this deer comes up to him and he breaks its neck and has a laugh. And then
didn't he also throw the deer at a helicopter?
I don't remember that.
He threw some animal at some helicopter that was following him at some point. And again, he was having a good chuckle over it. So.
Yeah, and when he's taking out the Justice League, he thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's something that's been lost to time with the character, that he has he delights in being violent and nasty. Mm. You know? I mean, and you know he's a monster because he kills a bird and a deer.
Yeah.
I mean, they should just have him wander into a pet shelter and just...
Oh, God.
Go for it, you know, just in case no one gets the message.
Yeah. I think maybe it's a good thing they reined it in a little bit then.
Anyway, I guess as a story, I mean, it starts, Doomsday shows up, it ends with Doomsday and Superman dead, and I guess the really big deals about this is what happened afterwards. So, I mean, the legacy of this is really quite interesting and intricate. So, they basically, I think they stopped the book, the Superman books for a month or two, and then they came back with The World Without a Superman,
mm-hmm,
which was quite an interesting exploration of, you know, who had to step up in Superman's absence. You know, and then there was the growing mystery of, I think, Pa Kent has a heart attack and Superman's body goes missing, and, you know, there's all, you know, a bit of stuff going on in the background.
Yeah.
And then they followed this up, so this went on for a few months, and then they did Reign of the Superman, where Superman gets replaced by four new characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that had some really lasting impact. It added new characters to the Superman world and the DC universe. And as far as introducing four new characters, they've done very well with these characters because they have lasted and endured.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got the cyborg Superman, who's, initially wasn't a villain, obviously, but turned out to be, you know, evil.
Yes.
Yes. And then you had Steel, you know, John Henry Irons, who had a super suit,
mm-hmm,
and a big hammer. And you had Superboy, the sort of clone version of Superman, the younger.
Yeah.
And then there was the Eradicator, who had actually shown up earlier than this, but sort of came into his own, and then went on to greatness, like when he joined the Outsiders.
Right.
So a lot came from this. And there was also a very important thing that happened in Reign of Superman, where Coast City got destroyed. And that,
yes,
triggered a whole lot of future plots for the Green Lantern.
Oh,
title.
Yes.
And Hal Jordan as a character. And some stuff happened that meant something. But
yeah,
obviously, this has lasted and endured. And people, you know, it was a huge seller. The media got hold of it. I mean, I'll tell you how big this became. They did a card series for it.
Yeah, you're not big unless you've got a trading card series. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's making it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's official. But yeah, the public got involved. So, you know, people were coming into comic shops to buy this comic that just heard about it. It was a massive seller. They did, you know, lots of reprints. They did the issue where he dies came out in a black bag with an armband and things like that.
Yeah.
I think I ordered like 3 copies of it.
And, oh, wow.
You know, yeah. And I sold one back to the shop of, you know, 2 weeks later for $20 and so funded my addiction that way. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well played.
But, a big deal, a huge seller, and it was at the height of comic collectability and speculation. So.
Mm. I mean, this made it onto, like, you know, mainstream news channels, the fact that DC were killing off essentially their poster boy. You know, this was the end for their biggest icon in the universe. So it was a massive deal back then.
Yeah, and they did a fake, DC did a fake magazine about it as well. They did a Newsweek issue.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, some interesting stuff. And strictly speaking, this isn't a mini-series. This is just an in-book event.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But I think we would be feeling fairly foolish if we ignored it.
Yes. It's certainly got up there with in terms of eventiness.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the iconic archetype superhero of the comics world, and to just kill him off, as you said, not in like a special miniseries, in his own books.
Yeah,
you know, it was massive.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it actually awakened something in the industry where people went, oh, hang on, we can do these stunts and make people notice and get people on board. And, you know, so this really opened the door to using the death of a character as an event.
Mm.
Yes. And we're so happy that door is open. Aren't we all?
Oh, aren't we just?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Kiss. I mean, you know, they took off the makeup so they could put the makeup back on. And, you know, if you kill someone, you can bring them back and you get two events out of it.
Yeah, yes.
So, I mean, we're seeing that now with the death of Wolverine, and we're in the midst of the hunt for Wolverine, or the rediscovery of where Wolverine is at this point, as it's called. So, if you want to know more about the Superman, but like, we're just glossing over this. We're just skimming the surface. If you want to know more, Michael Bailey's Superman podcast would be a good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
He's been covering the Superman books for a long, 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 long time with Scott Gardner, and I think that's they would have gone really deep on this over many episodes, so you can go and check that out.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. I'm trailing.
Man, it sure is great to be back to FCTC after such a long time.
Yes, it is, and we've been away so long.
Yeah, but real life and... you know what? I just can't do this.
Can't do what?
We have taken more breaks from this show than my wife has had in her entire life. I mean, we can talk about real life getting in the way.
Which it has.
But it's just not fair. So we're not going to joke around, and we're going to simply say that for the moment, we're back, and there's a lot of neat stuff to talk about.
Like season 2 of Lois and Clark.
And the death of Clark Kent.
And the launch of Superman the Man of Tomorrow.
And the return of Lex Luthor.
And the trial of Superman.
And Underworld Unleashed.
The show can still be found at the Superman homepage, as well as at the Fortress of Baileytude.
And we're still part of the Superman Podcast Network.
So From Crisis to Crisis is back.
For now.
And it will still come out on Thursdays.
Most week at www.fortressofbaileytude.com, www.supermanhomepage.com, or www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Now, Paul, what type of event do you think this falls under in terms of our four categories?
Ooh, well, this is tricky. I think it's an Occupy at this point. I mean, it starts off as an Occupy because they needed something to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned into a launcher.
Yeah.
But I think originally it was like, this is an Occupy, and then as it got bigger than Ben-Hur, the potential as a launcher appeared. From the midst for them. So, yeah. Do you concur?
I do. I at first I was like, it's an Occupy, but yeah, it's a bit of both, because you're right, it occupies the Superman books of the time, but it also gives us like the four new Supermen in Reign of the Superman, and then it kicks off stuff that, as you said, has a major effect on Green Lantern, with the destruction of Coast City during the Reign of the Superman stuff. So, yeah, it kind of launches stuff as well. So, yeah, I think it's a mix of both.
Yeah, and there was a Superboy book after this. There was a Steel book.
True. Yep.
Yeah, like you get with a DVD.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I think the Eradicator got a mini series. Cyborg Superman never got his own title. And Doomsday became, you know, the character you trot out when you want to show that, oh, this is really serious now, because Doomsday's back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I'm very comfortable in saying that every single appearance of Doomsday diminished the character greatly.
Yes.
Anyway, shall we unbuckle the scoring belt and whip out our scores?
Sure, if you want to frame it in that way. Okay, for scoring, for eventiness, I am giving Death of Superman 10 out of 10.
Wow.
It's a massive deal, you know? It made it onto the news of the day. It, like, had people going into comic stores to check it out and hopefully check out other stuff as well. It had a massive impact within the DC Universe, like the whole Funeral for a Friend storyline that came out after it, and, you know, the heroes having to step up and new people having to step up as well to sort of carry on his legacy of looking out for the little guy, you know. It was massive. And I'm not even that much of a Superman fan, and this is still a massive thing to me.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you there, Mike. I have to give it 10. I think it's... I guess the way it took off and captured the public imagination and, you know, people were like, oh, he's really dead, and, you know, they played that out very well. You know, they let it breathe and sit there. Yeah. And the way it, you know, it generated a lot of excitement, and it created a new thing for the industry to do, which is not a good thing, but, you know, killing off the character and, you know, telling that story, you know, what happens when they're off the board, they're gone.
Yeah.
And, so I think it's a 10 out of 10. Mostly because it was unprecedented at this point.
Yeah.
Now, we do have a semi-OCD scores this week coming from Susan Lundberg, who's Black Canary 02 on the Twitter. And she said, everyone knows who Superman is. Everyone. The death of Superman was one of the biggest comic events of the 1990s. The first really big character death. Before this, only sidekicks, wives, and children died, with the occasional B-lister for impact. Barry Allen and Supergirl died in Crisis, but then Wally West became an awesome new Flash, and no one knew how to write Supergirl anyway, so you can't really say that they were missed.
Wow.
Except for a few diehard fans, like Dr. Ange, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had ever really killed a super popular character before. So, eventiness, she gave it 9.5 out of 10.
Ooh.
And she says it loses half a point for being confined to the four core Superman titles, plus Justice League. It might have gotten a mention in other books, but they mostly went on as though nothing happened. However, both fans and people who had never entered a comic store truly believed that Superman was dead forever. It was a big enough story, or just a slow enough news week, that the major media outlets were talking about the death of Superman, and people who had never bought a comic before went there to get a Superman 75. Because of this, it gets half a point back. Oh, no, she took a point off. Anyway.
Right.
It loses a point.
Yes. Right.
Yes. So she gave it 9.5 out of 10. All right. So, all right, let's talk about the writing. I think it's probably the weakest point of this event is the writing.
In
that it's written like a Superman book from the early 90s. So there's a... You know, which I loved at the time. I really loved. But, you know, there's a little bit of lead-in continuity, which is sort of irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, there's the odd annoying character like Kenny Braverman, you know, the kid who's, you know, involved with it. You just want to see, yeah. Anyway, you don't want to care about him. You just want to see this Superman fight play out. And the Justice League were in their full-on teeth-gritting mode in... You know, so. So with all that in mind, I'm going to have to give it a 6. Yeah, writing the weakest part.
Yeah, I hear you, and I concur. I'm giving it a 6 as well. It's when you boil it down, it's a very basic story. Giant monster is on the loose. Our hero comes up to defend his people and his city from it, but unfortunately, he dies. He sacrifices himself to save everyone. The end. It's a very, as you said, very A to B story. And it does it, but yeah, some of the stuff that led into it, like the whole Underworld of stuff, reading it in the trade sort of had me scratching my head because it doesn't really help with anything. And yeah, it's okay, but there's not a lot to it, not a great deal of surprises or anything.
Yeah, and I didn't really like the Justice League issue where Superman is on TV while the Justice League are fighting, and he's, you know, taking some pretty inane questions from people. And
yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, meanwhile the Justice League getting ripped to bits and he's just, you know, on TV having a, you know, doing an interview that is probably not worth his time, considering who he is and what he, other things he could be doing, despite Doomsday showing up anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Susan said 9 out of 10 for writing.
Oh!
Yeah, but she gave 10 out of 10 for Funeral for a Friend. So the main four writers, Dan Jurgens, Louise Simonson, Roger Stern, and Jerry Ordway, wrote with one hive mind to bring about a scenario that could actually kill a Superman, with Jurgens going in for the final blow in Superman 75. Granted, I read this as back issues, but I still cried my guts out as everyone who knew Kal-El dealt with his death.
Mm-hmm.
I'm emotionally dead, so I don't cry over comics and things like that, but... Yeah, it's great that it affects someone that strongly. So
yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You want to cover the art and covers?
Art and covers. I'm going to give it a 7 for the art and the covers. It's very 90s in its style. As you said, lots of gritting of teeth and, you know, lots of big fight scenes. And it does the job, but there was nothing that really... stood out and wowed me, apart from the one thing I noticed is that as the story progresses and gets closer to that final issue, that Superman 75, where he actually dies, I don't know if you noticed, Paul, but the number of panels per page decreases.
Yes.
So, like, in Superman 75, each page is basically an entire panel, but before that... You know, the issue before that was down to 2 panels per page, and the one before that had 3.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I thought that was an interesting countdown effect in a way. So I think that was an interesting design choice and way of presenting the story. But other than that, the art was like, yeah, it was okay. It didn't really wow me at all. So I think 7 is a fair score for that. What about you?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I remember that. It makes the art become more intense as everything gets more epic. Splash pages come at the very end of the story. So,
yes.
I think the design of Doomsday is really strong. He's a, you know, a very formidable looking character with, when they advertised the series as coming, it had his silhouette.
Mm.
And, you know, he's got a great silhouette of a character that you can immediately recognize because he's got all these spiky bits,
yes,
you know, on his elbows and knees and things like that. And the art is very good throughout. I mean, the Superman books always had solid art. Yeah. I'm giving it a 7. It's not, you know, mind blowing. It's not Perez.
Yeah.
And it's not Mignola, but it's very good for, you know, they had a really tight team working really well across all these books.
Yeah.
Probably I enjoy Bogdanov the least of the artists involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, strong stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and particularly the covers. The visual at the end of the tattered Superman cape on a stick.
Yeah. That's pretty iconic these days.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a great cover. And, you know, cape on a stick is one of my favourite things to order at the carnivals.
What did Susan think of the art and the covers, Paul?
Okay. She gave it 8 out of 10, and she said mainly for the weakness in the art of Man of Steel. The other books, penciled by Tom Grummett, Jackson Geis, and Dan Jurgens for Doomsday, and adding in guest pencillers for Funeral, plus inkers Brett Breeding, Doug Hazelwood, Dennis Junkie, Dennis Rodia, and Rick Burchett, put out a consistent emotional art and walked the line of gritty heroism well. The cover of Superman 75 with the S cape on a pole like a battle flag is an iconic cover. You don't even need to see the death of the Superman legend to know what it's all about. Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So 8 out of 10. So
mm.
Now we get to the big one, Impact and Legacy. So I think this is as big as a story in crossing over in comics can get, I would say. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, I just have to give it a 10. I mean, it had a really long tail, which generated really good stories, and they spun things out of it, and pretty much everything that was spun out of it stuck.
Yeah.
You know, all these characters, they're still showing up. I mean, Zack Snyder couldn't resist the visual candy of the death of Superman and had to work it into Batman vs. Superman. You know, so, you know, it's super iconic and it's super, I don't know, it's one of the great Superman stories just for how it just it sat there and sort of sucked all the attention at the time.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mike?
I'm going to give it an 8 for impact and legacy because at the time it had a massive impact. And yes, some of the characters and the events that happened in it and as a result of it still were a big deal, like the whole Coast City stuff leading into Parallax, you know, the new Superboy book, John Henry Irons, you know, all really popular stuff. I guess for me, and I know people just roll their eyes when I say this, the fact that the death didn't stick it bugs me. I think it would have been more effective if, I would be accepting of, say, if they did like one Superman book that was like, you know, the Untold Tales of Superman back when he was still alive. But I think I would give it 10 out of 10 if he had actually stayed dead.
Oh.
And if that to me would make it seem like a bigger deal. That was like, wow, they actually went and did it and stuck with it and didn't bring him back. And then the DCU was literally changed. And look, you know, Supergirl became more important, or not that she isn't already, you know, or all the other heroes had to step up and, you know, take his place. And the fact that, the death that he quote unquote got better, that to me is why I've taken points away from it, because if the death had stuck, it would be a 10. But and I get that they can't kill off their biggest hero, you know, forever. That would just be shooting themselves in the foot in terms of business revenue. But at the same time, I just think it just would have meant more to me if, like, and I know that sounds morbid, if they'd kept him 6 feet under.
Yeah, well, I imagine if the New 52 was, you know, the relaunch and that was restarting continuity and Superman was, you know, back again.
Yeah.
You know, that would have way more impact. I mean, but even then, the death of Superman was, you know, such a cool story that they had to sort of say that it had actually happened at this point in the New 52. So, you know, we're starting afresh, except, you know, there's stories that are really big sellers that we want to keep track of.
Some of it still happened, and other bits were going to be brand new stories. Yeah. But yeah, I think, it's 8 out of 10 for me.
Okay. 8 out of 10. Ooh. All right, so let's hear from Susan. She said, 9 out of 10, in that nothing was sacred in comics after the death of Superman. Any character could die at any time. There was no Superman comics at all from April to June 1993, just to show you what a world without Superman was like. People flocked not only to the newsstand issue, but also the comic store-only version with the poster and the armband. It was the beginning of speculative comic purchasing. It loses points in that Superman didn't stay dead. There you go, same point. So nothing really changed, other than it was set a huge precedent for killing, or in Batman's case, crippling a big hero, only to have them come back in anywhere from a month to a year later, unaffected by the trauma. We didn't want Superman to stay dead, but having him come back lessened the impact of the story over time. It was only significant for that year. Yeah. Wow. All right. Thank you for your contribution, Susan. So, check Susan out on Twitter. She is a fabulous poet.
Yes. And
writes lovely little Twitter poems and celebrates poetry in Twitter.
And she's just cool in general. So thank you, Susan. Yeah, thanks for joining us this time.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. So, all right, now it's the part of the show that's the hardest for me, where I have to add things up. So, all right, so you gave it 31, and I gave it 33, and Susan gave it 36. Wow. And we have her score because she's semi-OCD, not as important as us. So she gets 18, and we add those together. And good grief, Mike, we've got a new number two book. It's 82 Whoa. Out of 100.
Whoa. It's pretty big.
Whoa. Yeah. So, as always, if you want to head over to Comicosity, you can see the table with all the scores sitting there for every episode that we've done, for every book that we've covered. And it's getting up there now. This is the ninth episode, so, you know, solid chunk of stuff to look at there now. You can do some sorting on the table, have a bit of fun. You can, you know, call your kids over and your wife and say, hey, look at this, hey, or your husband.
Yep. That's what families are doing around the world. They're crowding around the monitors to check out the table.
Yeah, and we really appreciate Aaron doing the updates on the table for us every time and, you know, promoting our podcast on Comicosity, which is a fantastic site for comic stuff. So, sweet. All right. Now, we do have a little bit of feedback. I'm going to call that up. So we heard from Keith Corbeck, and he talked about the Eclipso app, and he said, great podcast on Eclipso. I had to pause for laughter at Bart Sears makes everyone look like a condom stuck with walnut. that diamond was the most memorable part, for sure. It's a rare gimmick cover that actively tries to damage other comics around it. For what it's worth, the criteria I always use to define what is and isn't a comic event are a standalone mini and at least two other titles crossing over. Counting the days until you get to Bloodlines. Ooh, not long to go. Not long. When we started, we thought, it has to have a mini and it has to have issues that tied into it. But, you know, we're sellouts. We soon strayed from that path when I realized there were some really big comics that we weren't going to cover.
Yes.
You know, it's a little bit of a joke if you say we're going to cover DC events and you don't do, you know, things like Nightfall.
Yep.
You don't do The Death of Superman and stuff like that. So, we had to, we bend, we adjust, you know.
We're flexible.
Yeah.
We are a leaf on the wind.
We are. Yeah. And hopefully it's a success. I mean, I always used to think the true measure of success was a pizza oven in your office, but maybe this is successful too.
Right.
Anyway, all right. So what are we doing next time, Mike?
Next time on the feed, we are doing another Waiting for Doom episode. I believe we'll be looking finally at some more John Byrne Doom Patrol. Everyone's been waiting for that. And then the week after that, DC OCD will be back, and we will be looking at Nightfall.
Nightfall. Ooh. Yeah, it's like The Death of Superman except for Batman without the death. So. Oh, I spoiled it.
Yes, you did.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, you can go to the Twitters and look at DCOCDcast. And if you want to send us an email, if you want to send us an email, you can send it to DCOCDcast@gmail.com. All right, thank you, Mike. Thank you, another one down.
Yes, thank you, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, so we're heading further into the 90s next time. So, hang on, everyone.
Grit those teeth.
Yeah. Get some spittle strands between those teeth as well.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we'll catch you all next time. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.